And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Experience Hockey Talk, serious hockey talk for serious hockey fans. And this is Mike, as always, because, well, somebody's got to host, record, and do all the editing. So, and of course, joining me this week, yes, it's a Steve-less week. He has to work at the ice rink, and Shaggy's on his way to Nashville right now for the NWHL All-Star Game. So who better to bring on the show than our own NWHL insider, Mr. Nate Oliver. Nate, my friend.
How you doing, Michael? Thank you for having me on board.
How you
Always
been,
a pleasure.
How you been?
Doing well. We've had some crazy weather here in Buffalo. We went from blizzard and minus 20 or minus 30 wind chills, and then we had 60 degrees, and now we're down to 20, all within a week's time. We've had freezing rain and pretty much anything you can name weather-wise we've had in Buffalo within the past week. So in addition to battling all that, I'm doing pretty well.
Hey, well, I gotta say one thing about the weather. You can't touch Maryland because Maryland can get all four seasons in one day.
I believe it, but you make your way up to Buffalo at some point soon so we can hang out. But I think you'd be impressed with how it is here.
I've driven through Buffalo once before when I was on a family vacation to Toronto and Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it was just a drive through, but I did get to see the HSBC Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty cool.
Yep.
And that was about it.
Well, it's definitely, from a hockey standpoint, it's definitely a hockey town. And I think we do a good job of living up to our nickname of the City of Good Neighbors, because most people that you meet around here are rather kind and will have your back. They'll watch out for you and they'll welcome you.
Will they try to hit me with a car when I'm going for the crosswalk?
That shall not happen. I can't guarantee it, but I highly doubt it will happen.
There's a reason why I mentioned that, because it almost happened before this recording. Ladies and gentlemen, Maryland's, if you live in the state of Maryland, it is state law to let the pedestrian go through the crosswalk they have the right of way. I almost got hit twice tonight.
Amazing how people don't always pay attention to that, even though it should be common sense that you let people cross the street. Most people don't see, I shouldn't say most, a fair amount of people tend to forget that or ignore it.
I think they just ignore it.
Yeah.
I don't think they forget. They just don't do it. You know. But so this weekend, tomorrow, we have the NWHL Super Skills Competition. And Sunday at 2 p.m. at Bridgestone Arena, we have the NWHL All-Star Game. A couple minor changes to the rosters,
yeah,
because of national team call-ups. Nate, why don't you tell us about some of those changes?
Well, I would say the biggest one, Michael, would have to be Miri Raisinen of the Connecticut Whale. Of course, she is a goaltender for Team Finland. That's her national team. She's a bronze medalist with them. And is one heck of a goaltender. I think I've said it before on the show that if it were not for Nora Ratu, who plays in the CWHL, has pretty much been the face of Finnish hockey for decades now, since 06 in Torino, Miri Raisinen would certainly be the top goaltender for the Finns. So because she has joined up with the national team in the meantime, Katie Burt is on board and is going to take her spot. And the funny thing with that is that Katie Burt probably could have been named to the All-Star game regardless. But, you know, the league as it is so thick and deep with fantastic goaltenders. So the fact that you only can send a few to the All-Star game, you know, it kind of maybe hinders things right there is for everybody getting a shot, but it is a good opportunity for Katie to go, and great for Miri as well, too, to be with her team.
Right. Now, have they, I haven't been able to keep tabs as closely as Shaggy has, who, as I mentioned, is on his way to Nashville right now to cover the events for TXHT. Have they announced the skills competition, who's participating in which event yet?
Yeah, they have. And we can, if you'd like, we can go through that. The one that I always, there's two that I enjoy in particular. The one that's probably my favorite would be Fastest Skater Competition. And they've broken it down between the two different teams competing against each other. So you have Team Zabados for Shannon Zabados, the goaltender for the Buffalo Buttes, and you have Team Steckline for Lee Steckline, a defender for the Minnesota Whitecaps, and also one of the gold medalists for Team USA from Pyeongchang. So when you're looking at Zabados' team for Fastest Skater, she's got Michelle Picard from the Riveters, Amanda Pelkey, Lexi Bender from Boston, Kendall Coyne Schofield, which should be no surprise there after what she did with Fastest Skater at the NHL All-Star Game.
That was so awesome.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, she really, you know, just watching her, I think if you're a fan of hockey in general, I don't think anybody, if you go on social media, whether it's Twitter, if you go onto YouTube even, you had to watch that at least twice, if not. I mean, I think I probably watched it myself 10 times because it was that fun to see her go at such a high pace and such high speed. Just fantastic.
Well, not like that, but I think it's also because, you know, I watched it like 10, 15 times just like you did. But I think it's also just because, you know, we cover the NWHL. We've seen Kendall play live, and to be able to see her on that stage, it was just incredible. And it's like you don't want to believe it, but then you watch it and you go, I believe it. So it's definitely really cool about that.
And to your point, the thing about that is that, like you said, you and I and those who follow the NWHL, we knew what she was capable of, and how cool is it to see people see her for the first time flying at such speeds and appreciating it. I think that was extra special for proponents of the NWHL is that, yeah, we knew what she could do. We knew how great of a skater she is. And then to see fans that may not be familiar with the league, may not live anywhere close to an NWHL team, and to see her do it and just be in awe of what she was doing out on the ice was fantastic. So,
Connor McDavid pretty much going, I thought she won.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, and you could see Patrick Kane. I remember seeing him on the bench watching, being just so enamored and so excited for her. And it was great, the response that she got as she finished the competition and the support that she got from the other players, you know, let alone the fans and the media personalities that were covering it. I mean, everybody was just totally genuinely impressed. So it was fantastic. And so, you know, so that's the Zabados team that's going to be doing a Fastest Skater Competition. And they're going up against Steckline's team with Lisa Chesson, a defender for the Buffalo Buttes, actually a Minnesota native. Ohio native. And then three players from the Whitecaps who are Steckline's team. So some of her teammates are in the Fastest Skater Competition, Jonna Curtis, Katie Shipper, and Ellie Thunstrom. So that in itself is going to be really, really exciting to see take shape. I will say there's one thing that I'm disappointed about, and it was just because I'd like to see who's actually faster, Kendall or Kristen Lewicki for the Metropolitan Riveters. Lewicki's nickname is Wheels, and they call her that for a reason because she is lightning quick. And I was really hoping we'd have a chance to see the two of them square off. But Lewicki was not named to the All-Star team this year. So maybe next season or sometime going forward. But that would have been a cool one to see. And then the other one that I always get particularly excited about is the shooting accuracy competition. And again, you got some just fantastic players for both sides. So Zabados is going to, her squad is going to have Haley Skamura, Haley Skarupa, and Savannah Harmon, rookie defender Savannah Harmon, who is playing this season for Buffalo like she's been in the league since day one. You wouldn't think at all that she's a rookie, but she has just been lights out in terms of her confidence and how well she's fit in with this league. Really no adjustment period for her, noticeably, for anybody that's watching. She's just been fantastic. And for Stecklein, she's going to have Hannah Brandt, Dani Cameronisi, and Emily Falzer with shooting accuracy on her team. So just, again, the premier players in the league, super exciting, and it's a lot to be pumped about right now.
All right. And then going into this All-Star game itself on Sunday at 2 p.m., which you can watch where?
Right on Twitter and off of the NWHL website, are the outlets that I usually choose from when I'm streaming a game. So that will most assuredly be fun to tune in to check out if you can't make it to Nashville.
And the reason I did the quick plug is because I want to ask you this. Sunday, 2 p.m., you can watch on Twitter or on the NWHL website. Who do you think has the edge in the All-Star game?
Well, that is tough to say. I think, you know, obviously what you might want to pinpoint, and it's what is being a major factor in regular season play this year, is the goaltending. And the fact that Shannon Zabados, who is arguably the greatest goaltender to ever play in women's hockey. She's a three-time Olympian, two-time gold medalist, one-time silver medalist. She played professionally in minor league with male teams, and she's just phenomenal. So, you know, she's captain one of the teams. Obviously, she'll get her turn in goal. And then when you look over to Lee Stecklein's team, Zabados' goaltending partner is opposite on that, Nicole Hensley. So you have the two goaltenders for the Buffalo Buttes facing off against each other. And hopefully, you know, with the way that they do the periods and whatnot, they'll be on the ice against one another at the same time. So that will be especially exciting to see the two of them go against each other. We're used to seeing them on the same squad with Buffalo, and now here's a chance, even if it is just for fun, it's a chance to see them going head-to-head. And I think the fans are going to enjoy that in particular. The other thing that's interesting about that, too, is one of the other goaltenders for Stecklein's team is Minnesota Whitecaps goaltender Amanda Levier. And, of course, Lev, not only is she a standout all-star goaltender for the Minnesota Whitecaps, but she's an Isabel Cup champion with the Buffalo Buttes, and she's the reigning NWHL Best Goaltender Award recipient. So she is the other goaltender on Stecklein's team. So to have her and Hensley, I mean, you want to talk about an all-star team, that is very much an all-star goaltending tandem right there. You know, and again, it's going to be interesting to see who gets the upper hand here between Hensley and Zabados. If you look at the standings of the NWHL right now, the Buffalo Buttes have allowed the least amount of goals through the regular season thus far. In their 13 games played, they've only allowed 18 goals. I mean, that's just unbelievable. And not that Amanda Levier and Julie Friend and for the goaltenders for the Whitecaps have played poorly, but, you know, just to look at the difference of it. So the Whitecaps have played 14 games. They've given up 32 goals. The Buttes have played 13 games and have given up 18. I mean, it's just lights out numbers by Hensley and Zabados. And I think that those are going to be the major deciding factors. The goaltending is what it's really going to come down to on Sunday.
Now, you mentioned like the goals against between Minnesota and Buffalo. Do you feel that maybe also that contributes to that is also the structure in front of the goaltenders?
Oh, most assuredly. I had a chance earlier this week to touch base with a player who is not going to be at the All-Star game. You know, we're talking about Amy Schlegel, who's a Whitecaps defender. She's in her rookie season, and she's a defender for them. And both squads, both the Buttes and the Whitecaps, you know, there they are, these teams that the preeminent teams in the NWHL. Many feel that either one of them is going to be the Isabel Cup champions. And part of the success for their goaltenders is the defense in front of them and their forwards that are so good at playing both ways on offense and defense. So I would say that most assuredly. And so here's a defender like Amy Schlegel. Has played a great rookie season so far. She actually leads the Whitecaps in penalty minutes this season, but she's got a pair of goals, pair of assists through the 12 games that she's played. She's played in 12 of their 14, and she didn't even make the All-Star roster. So you look at the different squads, and it, you know, we'll focus on Minnesota, for example. So right now they got, they have both of them, both they and Buffalo have 8 players each that were brought to the All-Star game. You look at Minnesota, they got Hannah Brandt, they got Jonna Curtis, Ellie Thunstrom, Katie Schipper, Amanda Boulier. Talk about defense right there. Here's a player that was arguably the best player for the Connecticut Whale last season. She ends up signing with Minnesota this year. She's got a howitzer of a shot, and she actually is competing in hard of shot competition. I wouldn't be surprised if she wins it. And then you got Kendall Coyne Schofield, you know, all these great players that are so sound defensively, not even mentioning what they can do on offense. But yeah, to your point, the defense in front of the goaltenders, you can't say enough about how solid it's been for both Buffalo and for Minnesota.
Right. Now, with the All-Star break, a lot of us view this as the halfway point of the season. NWHL, they're a little past the halfway point. We're more at like the 3/4 of a way through the season at this point, I believe, because it's like, what, 18-game schedule?
16, so we're really into the home stretch.
Oh, wow, we're really into the home stretch now. So with that, I thought it was 18. I don't know why I thought it was 18.
Let me. Yeah. No worries. But no, they got Amy Schlegel was saying she's got 2 games remaining in the regular season. So,
and they played 14. So yeah, that would be equal 16. Look at that. We can do math. Yay.
Yes.
but okay. So we're really like 7/8 of the way through this season then, with the All-Star break. So now this is the time where, like with your article with Amy, you're focusing now on the NWHL playoffs.
Yes.
If you're like one of these top teams, do you want to have that first round bye? Because I think that's how that's going to work.
Yeah, you're correct. So the way that the structure works is whoever finishes in first place gets an automatic bye for the first round. The second and third place team then face each other in an opening round, and the fourth and the fifth place team face each other in an opening round as well, too. And when we say round, it is just a single game. It's not a series. In fact, the whole playoff structure is based on individual games and not series. So if you get that top overall seed, yes, you have a bye for the first round. And then furthermore, you will play the winner of whoever is the winner of the fourth or fifth place game. So it's not like, you know, you get the bye and then you got to play either the second or third place team. You're still getting the advantage of playing one of the lower seeded teams and conceivably, you know, a lesser team than whoever finishes at number one. So you get the bye there. And then the other thing that's huge about it, too, is that you're guaranteed home ice advantage throughout the entire postseason. So if we're talking about the Whitecaps right now, let's say that the All-Star game was not this weekend and it was the start of the playoffs instead. So Whitecaps are at the top of the standing. They'd have a bye. And then depending on how it goes from there, they would play their first postseason game, which would be essentially the second round, and they would have home ice advantage. And then if they would win that one, then they would have home ice advantage for the Isabel Cup final as well, too. And I think that's just an interesting spin on it, that it's so important to get that top seed and know, if nothing else, for your fan base. And knowing that you're not going to have to do the traveling that the other teams would have to do throughout the postseason, the wear and tear of that, so teams are definitely vying for that, wanting to have that top seed.
Okay, so I'm trying to make sense of this, of what you mm-hmm. just said. Yes. I even pulled out my legal pad to try to, like, there's the clicking of my pen. and you said one gets the bye.
Correct.
2 and 3 face each other and 4 and 5 face each other?
That's correct.
Wouldn't it be the other way where 2 would face 5 and 3 would face 4?
Not in this instance, no.
Okay. And then, so let's say 2 beats 3 and 4 beats 5, just for the sake of it.
Mm-hmm.
then that would mean you would have three teams. Because if one had the bye in the first round, and two and three played each other, and four and five played each other, then one would play four, and then two would have a bye.
No, there's no bye for the next round. What happens is whoever wins out of two and three will go automatically into the final.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So then they technically get a bye in the semifinals.
Correct. Yeah, so you look at it that way, and then whoever is the one of the bottom two teams, whether you're the fourth or the fifth place, that is a huge hill to have to climb, because not only you're guaranteed. If you come through, let's say the bottom team right now is the Connecticut Whale. If the Whale beat the Metropolitan Rivers, who are in fourth place, if the Whale beat them, you know right off the bat they have to play the Whitecaps or whoever is the top seed, if they're even going to have a sniff of the final. There's definitely a huge incentive to finish towards the top.
I wish this was video, because everyone would just be watching me stroking my beard, trying to go, like, with this befuzzled look on my face, going like, how does this work? Like, you're explaining it to me and it makes sense.
It makes sense, but
at the same time. It's like...
Yeah, it would...
It's a completely different way of doing things.
I think we could discuss whether we like the format or not. I think what the NWHL was leaning towards doing was making sure that all five teams get a playoff game. And in this instance, they're guaranteed that. And, you know, and you would want that as well, too, just for the sake of the fan bases. But if we're looking at maybe a more cohesive way of putting it together in a way that makes more sense, what probably should have been done, or at least in my opinion, is that whoever finished fifth did not make the postseason. And then it's very simple. You could structure it either way that you want. You could have one play four, two play three, and the opening round, and then whoever wins those would obviously meet in the final. You could do one faces two, three against four, however you want to do it. It probably would have gone together a lot more easily if that fifth place team was eliminated, but it's just not the case.
Well, the way I would have done it, because I've played in five-team divisions before, was that what you did was is that you took your 4-5 and you put them in a wild card game.
Okay.
And then the winner of that game will then go into the real first round. So essentially you're getting all five teams a playoff game. It's just that one of those playoff games is considered a wild card. And then the first place team would face the four for the fifth, and then two would face three. Because that was the reason why I asked you. It's like when you said it, like, oh, one gets the bye, two faces three in the first round, four faces five. And I'm like thinking to myself, like, you mean two faces five and three faces four? Because it's like, because that's just how I would have done it. So
yeah,
the thing is that if you go into a six-team division, which I'm also accustomed to, it actually becomes a lot easier, because you just have the top two seeds get a first round bye, and then three faces six and four faces five, and then the winner of the two, and then you take the lowest seed and you put them up against the first place team, and you take the second lowest seed and you put them up against the second place team in the next round.
Yeah.
And that's with a 6-team league or division.
Yeah. And I've said before on the show that I'm a bit of a traditionalist. So, you know, when that day comes, and it will come, that there will be at least a 6-team added to the NWHL. You know, I guess I would view it, I would like to view it when we had the original six in the NHL, is that the bottom two did not make the playoffs. And I think that, you know, I understand, yes, we want to be conscientious of fan bases and fan support, and a playoff atmosphere is always a blast and fun, and you want each of the markets to have that and experience that. And again, I think that is really what has driven this particular playoff format. But you know, from a hockey standpoint, I don't know if it makes the most sense. So basically, if you're the second or the third place team, whoever wins that series is automatically in the final.
And if I'm the first place team, I'm going, we're the best team in the league.
Right.
So, why aren't we going into the championship game automatically?
Right. And so, yes, and that makes it even funnier to contemplate, because even if you're the top seed, sure, you get a bye per se, but are you really getting one? Because either way, it seems just a means of postponing that you'll face either the fourth or fifth place team.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to play them regardless. It's making sure that your bye isn't essentially a bye. You're just playing later, I guess would be the way that I would put it.
Yeah. My brain hurts.
Yeah, mine does too. It is a simple concept as it is. It's a hard one to get around, but there are some benefits to it too, and that's the main takeaway of it. Going back to your original question, is why you would want to be that first place team. Yes, you don't. Maybe you can stave off elimination for another day. That's part of it. So you know that you're going in five teams. You get to sit on the sidelines while two of those teams get eliminated. And then probably more importantly to the actual hockey structure of it is that you're guaranteed home ice advantage for the entire playoff run, no matter who your opponent is. You're going to have that home ice advantage. So, again, we're talking the Minnesota Whitecaps. Whoever they would play after they've had their quote-unquote bye, they're going to face on at home. And it would be the same if they win that game and make it to the final. And the way I look at it is that between Buffalo, Boston, Connecticut, and Metro, those teams have gotten by through the first 3 years of the league rather easily, just commuting to one another. Whether, for the most part, they've traveled by bus. I mean, that's pretty much been what it is, and it's not that taxing to go between cities. But if Minnesota finishes at the top of the standings and has that home ice advantage, everybody's going to have to make the trek out to Minnesota. And in every instance, teams have flown out there. And you worry about things, missing equipment, something getting damaged on the way. These little things that, you don't want to think about and don't worry about are stuff that happens just as a natural part of traveling. And, if Minnesota gets that, it's just one less thing that they got to worry about. They don't have to make that journey. And I think that's what they're shooting for. Let's say they don't finish in first place, which could conceivably happen, and they get either the second or third place. Well, in most senses, they're going to have to play on the road. Even if it's not in the first round, if they were the number two seed and played number three, they would have home ice. But if they made it to the final, then they're going to have to play on the road. So it's just nice to not have that worry if you were to get the number one seed.
Now, last question for you.
Sure.
Because you cover the Buttes, you know the Buttes intimately. If you're the Buffalo Buttes, who do you not want to face in the first round of the playoffs?
I would say Minnesota, absolutely.
And let's say they get the bye and you don't have that option.
Well, then second best would be the Boston Pride. And I've talked about that on the show before as well, too, that in my opinion, Boston is the dark horse of the league this season, because everybody's underestimating them. The discussion has been about Buffalo. The discussion has been about the Minnesota Whitecaps. Those are the two teams that everyone is predicting to win the Isabel Cup, and I don't think enough credit and enough credence has been offered towards Boston. They have an incredibly talented roster. Their goaltending is just top-notch between Katie Burt, Brittany Ott, Madison Litchfield, those three goaltenders. Ott's a Clarkson Cup champion. I mean, she was with the Boston Blades and won that the Clarkson Cup when she was in the CWHL. And then she immediately comes to the NWHL and wins an Isabel Cup as their goaltender. And she's been a recipient of the Best Goaltender Award before. And then you have the whole slew of players on the Pride that were additionally a part of that CWHL Clarkson Cup. I think of Jordan Smelker and Jill Dempsey and, Gigi Marvin's now back with the team after having been away with the U.S. national team. You have all these tremendous players, and you can't overlook that. They've won at all different sorts of levels, whether it's been at college, whether it's been an international play, and whether it's been at the women's professional game. they have a very deep roster, and I just don't think they're getting enough credit. If you want a feel-good story as well, too, that could come out of that, I look at Kelly Fratkin. Here's a player that, you know, Kelly Fratkin's been in the league since day one, and she has yet to play on an Isabel Cup-winning team. It seems that every team that she's played with ends up winning the Cup after she has moved on. So she started initially with Connecticut, and we know they haven't won it yet. But then she spent a season with the Riveters, and they win the Cup. She spent a season with the Pride, and they've won a Cup. Everywhere she's gone, it seems that she just misses the mark on the season that she's with them. So if there's a particular player that I would root for Boston, it'd be for Kelly Pride, or I'm sorry, Kelly Fratkin, and hope that she gets her name on the Cup. So I think, you know, that can be incentive for players right there as well, too. We got this player who's been in the league since day one. She hasn't won it yet. Let's win one for her. And I don't think that factor should be underestimated either.
Oh, you got to love those stories.
For sure. I mean, you know, and Fratkin, you know, she's a tough player to love. She's because she's the all-time leader in penalty minutes for the NWHL. She plays a very physical game, very robust game, sometimes borderline between legal and not legal. But she's a very tough player to play against. And a lot of opposing players don't like going up against her. The one team that she has not played for is, of course, the Buffalo Buttes. And she's been a thorn in their side since the league started. And now, you know, with the addition of the Whitecaps, she can be a thorn in their side as well, too. But she's a very tough player, and I think it would be great. She's the kind of player that you wouldn't want to see her retire without having won a Cup.
Right. All right, and I actually lied. I do have one more question.
Yes, sir.
If the NWHL ever did a press game, would you play?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't miss that for the world.
Oh, we're right there with there. I hope we're against each other because at least we can hit each other.
Yeah, I mean, they would have to, if we ever did that, they would have to sprinkle us in with maybe have some players, some all-stars in there. We certainly wouldn't be able to hold our own actually going up against the players. Might be fun, too, to maybe bring some of the retired players back, like Anya Badalino or Brianne McLaughlin or somebody like that, get them in for just a fun, feel-good game.
Oh yeah, that would be really cool. Like I remember the first season, and I kept pitching at them, like, "Can you do a press game? Can you do a press game?" You know, because I think it would be cool. Like, you know, because it would just something that, you know, especially like how hard you work, how hard Mike Murphy, Dan Rice, Erica Ayala, and, you know, so many others. There's just so many people that work so hard to have a moment like that. Of like, hey, we work hard, now we get to have a little fun by playing the game itself. I think that would just be cool in general.
Well, and to your point, Michael, and that was one thing, you know, you and I were both at the Isabel Cup final last season in New Jersey when the Riveters won it. And, you know, although that was not, you know, I'm a Buffalo boy born and raised, and the Buttes are the team that I cover. You know, although that maybe wasn't the outcome that I personally wanted, what I took great delight in seeing was that after on the ice, after the players and the coaches had really celebrated, they made sure to pass the cup off to Troy Parla, you know, a photographer that's covered the team since day one. They passed it off to Matt Falkenberry, their announcer who does their play-by-play and is just a wonderful person. I mean, Matt's just a fantastic guy. He was in tears when the players handed him the cup and poster pictures with them. I mean, and that's things little seems something so little. And the players really didn't need to do that, but, you know, they got it. They respected those that support the game in a role that's not on the ice, whether it's, you know, writing from their computer or doing interviews on the sidelines or handling play-by-play and color commentary. They get the bigger picture that there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of people with big hearts that make this league possible, and it was just nice to see. So whoever ends up winning the cup this year, I would hope that tradition continues and that the players of their own accord, and you know, you want it to be natural and heartfelt, but that they continue to acknowledge the good souls that really put a lot of heart and soul into this game.
Just remembers us, the little people.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So now we actually get to flip the script. Oh, wait, hold on. I think I need paper for that. There's paper. All right, we flipped the script. All right. So, obviously, DC-based podcast. Got to talk about the Capitals. Well, since last time we talked, the Caps aren't sucking now. Well, they kind of are. They kind of aren't. It depends on the type of – depends on when in the game they're playing, actually, to be brutally honest about that. So, as we discussed before we started recording, you get to ask the questions now. You get to be Mr. Interviewer.
Well, and I'm excited for it because, as I've said before, I don't get to see the Caps all that often living in Buffalo. I mean, of course, they come to town a few times a year. But it's always great to speak with somebody that's right there in the thick of things and is a lifelong Caps fan like you to get the thoughts. So
calling out people on Twitter. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, really. So real quick. Before you start asking questions, last night Twitter, I probably should have done it on my personal account, but I did it on the TXHT one because I kind of realized like we need to get more followers on the Twitter account.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there was a couple things that happened in the game where the people were booing, which they shouldn't have been booing. For instance, the referee blew the whistle quickly, and then when that happened, Backstrom got the puck and knocked it into the net, which resulted in no goal.
Right,
and as we know. Part of the in the rule book, there is the human element factor that is put into the rule book. So if the referee is has the intent to blow the whistle, the play is dead. You know, everyone's like, "Oh, boo, that was bad." And it's like, well, you clearly also hear the whistle right when Backstrom touches the puck,
right?
You know, you clearly hear it. And then there are some other things, and somebody tweeted me, but then cowardly. Deleted their tweet, and I was able to catch the gist. I actually read the full tweet before, and then I was going to try to respond to it, but because they got rid of it, I just responded with to the person who deleted their tweet, you know, and then I just kind of went at him, and I just said, you know, grow up, you know, because that was the big thing. It's like you guys just got to grow up, you know. Like, yeah, and I'm sure you probably don't do like the Facebook groups for the Sabres or anything like that, but
yeah, it's tough.
Very toxic.
Yeah, and I think I don't know to your point, Michael. I mean, I guess that's why I avoid it. You know, social media can be a wonderful thing, but it can also be a very poor and crude thing as well too. And you know, some harm can come from it. And it's tough to locate what are the right circles to walk in there and who you should interact with and who you shouldn't. It can be tricky at times for sure.
But I will put out the positive because as you said, it can be a great thing. Yes, I was kind of going after people because they're fair weather and they don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
I made a friend. His name is Edward Ford at Edward Ford 2020. Him and I, we were actually going back and forth. Actually, here's the tweet. I'm actually looking at it. So the person who replied and then deleted their tweet about the Backstrom goal that was disallowed in the first, that was the right call too. Whistle blew moment Backstrom touched the puck. Grow up and quit whining. # all caps.
Yeah.
Guy responded with, "What? LOL, I said, man, it's like people don't like facts. Welcome to social media." You know, but the thing is that him and I kept going back and forth, and now he's actually when I start playing ice hockey again, he's actually going to come out to one of my games,
and he's actually
and I'm going to show him what it's like when you're actually in the moment, because it's one thing to be in the crowd, it's one thing to watch on TV, but it's another thing when you're in the moment as either a player or as a coach or as a referee. There are so many factors that take place that a person who's just watching it may not notice it, but we will. And this guy's going to come out. He might actually just come out to one of my stick and shoots. Who knows? But, you know, the fact that this is how you grow the game through education.
Yep.
And this is somebody who wants to learn, and I will be, I am happy to teach him.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. All right. Now you can start asking questions. We kind of derailed a little bit there.
Oh, no. Totally fine. So, actually, I'm going to ask you, my first question was actually talked about on the radio here in Buffalo this morning. It was something that the radio personalities on our kind of the Sabres flagship station here in Buffalo were confused about. So we're hearing, at least, and you would probably be able to verify this, that Andrei Burakovsky is trade bait, or he's at least on the trading block. And
he's definitely on the trading block.
So the announcers here in Buffalo, and myself to some extent too, are trying to figure out why. Why is that a player that the Capitals would consider parting ways with and could potentially be a mistake?
So, interesting thing, we actually did talk about this a few weeks ago when Steve was on.
Okay.
When I flipped it and I let you and Steve ask me questions. And Steve asked about Burakovsky. And here's the thing. Burakovsky is in the last year of a two-year deal. He's going to be restricted. I don't think he has arbitration rights. But the thing is that with Burakovsky is that he's injured and he's also he's injury prone and he's inconsistent. Who does that also sound like that the Capitals got rid of going into last season? Marcus Johansson.
Sure. And he's what? He ended up with the Devils, correct?
Yeah, the Capitals traded him to the Devils after they signed Evgeny Kuznetsov to his eight-year contract.
Right.
And the thing – and here's the thing. I like Burakovsky. He has talent. But the problem is that there comes a point – like his rookie season was Barry Trotz's first year with the Caps.
Right.
So Burakovsky's in his fifth season now with the Capitals. There does come a time where you have to say, all right, we've been patient with you for 5 years. I think it's time for you to have a change of scenery. And that's what needs to happen with Burakovsky. He's definitely trade bait. He's definitely on the trade block. I don't think he's actually trade bait for something bigger, but he's definitely on the trade block. And I don't think it will be a mistake because okay. And the reason I say it won't be a mistake is because the Caps have so much depth too. I mean, you have Chandler Stephenson, Nick Dowd, and Dmitry Yaskin and Travis Boyd constantly rotating in and out of the lineup when all four of them could easily be in that lineup.
Right.
And then not only that, but down in Hershey, you got this kid named Riley Barber and another kid by the name of Shane Gersich. And Gersich can fly. And Barber can play. And so can Gersich. And then you also got Nathan Walker and Hershey. So you got three guys right there, depths alone. So if you trade Burakovsky, we have the depth to cover it. But at the same time, Brian McClellan, the general manager of the Capitals, has made it known that if we're going to trade Andrei Burakovsky, we're going to get another player back in return. We're going to get somebody back who can help this team now. And that's the other thing that people are forgetting. You know, I mentioned it on the episode with you and Steve when Steve asked about Burakovsky. And the trade that I would have done, which is not going to happen now because I don't see this team doing any trades whatsoever, would have been with Edmonton for Jesse Puljujarvi.
Right.
Because that's another kid with another team that needs a new, you know, a new atmosphere, a new scenery around him. And being how Peter Shirelli has been fired and Bob Nicholson's now running the show until they can get a new general manager, Bob Nicholson has kind of made it known that there's not going to be any signings or trades, you know, until they get a new general manager. I mean, the most that he's going to do is probably call-ups and send-downs. He may have to do a trade just because Andre Sequeira is coming back from injury. And they have to dump a salary to be able to bring him onto the roster. So
right.
That would have been the ideal thing right there for me personally, because it gives both players a new scenery that to play in, a new atmosphere, new opportunity. Burakovsky used to be line mates with Connor McDavid and Erie in the OHL, or yeah, I think it was the OHL, in the Canadian Hockey League, or in juniors. So I think that would have worked really well for Burakovsky. Paul Giujarvi coming over here would have been a really good thing for him. But then there's the possibilities of Vancouver. Although there's really, outside of an Elias Pettersson and a Brock Besser and a Bo Horvat and a Sven Berchi, there really ain't anybody I take off that team.
Yeah, and I don't know if any of those players they'd give up either, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the funny thing is, like, anyone who's listening to this is probably going, we want Jay Beagle back. Yeah, you can't afford to bring Jay Beagle back, you know?
That's a good point.
Salary cap alone, you're not going to be able to bring the guy back. I mean, right. It'd be nice to bring him back because we're suffering in the faceoff circle, but you can't bring back that salary. I'm sorry, right. You just can't. I know Dallas has been sending scouts. I mean that could be interesting. I'd have to look at Dallas's roster, to kind of like assess who we could trade for Burakovsky and stuff like that. But the other thing that McClellan has also openly admitted is that, you know, if there's a trade where he can get like picks, like first round, second round picks that he can flip, he'd do that too. So, I mean, it's an interesting thing. And then not only that, but the other factor is that Christian Jews is about to come back from that thigh surgery that he had. And so now you're going to put something in the flux of, obviously, they're going to have to send down Jonas Siegenthaler back down to Hershey because he's the only guy who can go down without having to go through waivers and risk losing the guy. And obviously, I think with Madison Bowie, you know, you don't want to give up on him because it's his second season in the NHL. And we all know with defensemen, it takes longer to develop. But if you're going – you mentioned Burakovsky as trade bait earlier.
Right.
Because that's what the people on the radio in Buffalo are saying.
Yes.
The real trade bait, in my opinion, is Madison Bowie.
Okay.
Burakovsky's on the block because everyone knows that he probably needs a new scenery around him. Bowie's the bait.
Interesting.
I think that because here's the thing. Jonas Siegenthaler has played his way onto the Washington Capitals. And it sucks that when Christian Jews comes back in the lineup, which is going to be great for the Cavs getting Christian Jews back, but it's going to suck having Jonas Siegenthaler sent down. We'd rather keep him up. So, and it's a tough situation there. But it's a good situation to have. Especially going into next season when you know Brooks Orpik is not going to be back because he pretty much hinted when they were getting ready to honor him for his 1,000th game that this was probably going to be his last season playing.
Right.
So, you kind of put all those little things into effect and roll with it. So, yeah.
That makes sense. You know, another thing I wanted to ask you about, too, and you actually kind of segued to it well when you were talking about the depth of the Capitals. So, you know, I'll use another example in Buffalo. So we got a player like Rasmus Asplund, who the Sabres drafted, and he's down in Rochester. We got Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, a goaltender that played in the World Juniors. He's in Finland, and the talk is that, you know, these are players that they're too young in their development that you don't want to bring them up to Buffalo, and it's too early for them to try that out. Is there somebody that the Capitals are doing that with, maybe a player that is on the younger side that someday will be a very solid, reliable player, but they're kind of keeping them waiting in the wings just to develop them properly?
Ilya Samsonov. The goalie prospect. He's in Hershey right now. It's his first year in North America, so he's adjusting to the smaller rink size. But they say he's been doing a lot better lately. So I know he's definitely, like, number one. You automatically go Ilya Samsonov. And actually, since I have it right here, as Doofus goes away from the microphone. Oh, good. I have it bookmarked. Let's see here. Now there's the futures watch. Like, you got Samsonov. He obviously comes up number one. One guy who I take my time with, and he's still in the in juniors, and that's Alexander Alexiev, who was their first round pick in the past draft. Take your time. And like, and the great thing, and I love this, the hockey news yearbooks at the beginning of the season, because it gives you like the projections of when they will be NHL ready. Although I kind of laugh at the Ilya Samsonov one, because they said this season, he's definitely not ready for this season. He's probably got at least another season or two to go before then.
Okay.
And that's going to be the interesting thing to watch too with him, is because Holtby's got like, I think he's got one more year left on his deal. And you're going to have to, and you're going to want to see how Samsonov develops and what the Capitals are going to decide to do with Holtby.
Right.
The big thing with the Phoenix Copley 3-year signing, you can read that easily that had expansion draft all over it. That's your goalie that you're going to expose at the expansion draft, is Phoenix Copley. So
yeah.
I think Axel Johnson Follaby. He's back over in Sweden right now. He has a clause in his contract where if he feels like he's not getting enough playing time, or being in Hershey is not beneficial to him, he can go back. He can be loaned to Sweden, and so that's what they did at the beginning of the season. I think what he needs to do is that he actually needs to spend a full season in Hershey. I get why he wants to go back to Sweden, because he's playing with like men and stuff like that. But yet again, you're playing with men and you're playing on the smaller ice surface, and you need to adjust to that style.
Right.
And if you're not going to adjust to that style, you're not going to be playing in the pros, or at least in the NHL. And not only that, but you got, you know, like Tobias Geiser, who's a Swiss defenseman. And Lucas Johansson, Ryan Johansson's brother. Look at that. Be a little Nashville tie-in.
Nice.
So, but yeah, those, I mean, everyone you got to take your time with. I mean, I'm going to look at the defense more than anything else, because you know Brooks Orpik is most likely going to retire.
Yeah.
He's hinted at it. So your D pairing next season on that third pair is now going to be Christian Jews with either Jonas Siegenthaler or Madison Bowie. The way play goes, I go with Jonas Siegenthaler, because he's played a lot better than Madison Bowie has this season. He has played himself in the spots. Like, there was the one game where the Capital, I think, actually it was the game against Nashville. Hmm. It was the game against Nashville where Nashville blew out the Capitals. And it was like, I think it was like 7-1 at that point or something like that. And Ryan Johansson, it was either him or Philip Forsberg, they're driving into the zone. And Jonas Siegenthaler is like playing him hard. Like, he's making it difficult on the guy, and he's playing stand-up defense against him. And it's like, you're down 7-1 and you're still playing like that? I like that out of a kid.
Right.
You know, that's what I want to see. So, I mean, and that's why I would put Siegenthaler in the lineup over Bowie. But, you know, it's tough. I mean, those are the tough decisions that thankfully you and I don't have to make. You
know? Most assuredly.
Yeah. I like my hair. It's nice. It's brown. I don't need the gray. You know, I'm just saying.
So, you talk about, you're kind of segueing nicely into the questions that I do have. So,
you
coming naturally to you. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, people that do have to make those tough decisions. So I want to know is, here is Todd Reirden, his first season officially at the helm. What is your report card like for him? How do you feel he has fared as a coach this season, the head coach?
Ooh, that's a good one. So here's the thing. You know, every team, and I know it's about Reirden, but I want to make this known to all those who are listening. every team, no matter who the coach, they all go through ebbs and flows. That's number one. The Capitals went through ebbs and flows with Bruce Boudreau. The Caps went through ebbs and flows with Dale Hunter. They went through it with Adam Oates. They went through it with Barry Trotz. And they're now going through it with Todd Reirden. It's the way hockey is. And I want to make that point first simply because, and you and I have talked about this, the toxicity on social media.
Correct.
I want people to understand that. Because we play. We understand that. People who just watch don't understand that. They don't understand what it's like to be in the moment. Because it's tough. And are there times, like last night, Todd Reirden did the challenge on the offsides and it ended up backfiring and then they had to take the delay of game penalty. It was onside. I'm sorry. Landeskog had his toe on the blue line when the puck came in the zone. It was onside. I'm sorry. You want to fight me? And that was the other. Oh, that was actually what set me off with calling people out on Twitter and saying that they need to grow up and stop whining. Because they were all upset about the offsides call. But if you looked at it on the screen and you watched it, watched the puck and watched the skate, it's onside. So. But Reirden did that, and I didn't think that was a good decision. But the thing is that he's also a rookie coach. You know, you got a rookie coach in Dallas, in Jim Montgomery. You got a rookie coach in New York City with David Quinn. You know, and they're doing pretty good for. They're not doing like spectacular, but they're doing pretty good for themselves. Todd Reirden inherited the defending Stanley Cup champions.
Right.
I think he's doing pretty good with them. I mean, yeah, you had a 7-game losing streak, but you want to know something really funny?
What's that?
Along with that 7-game losing streak, he's also had a 7-game winning streak.
Right.
And a 5-game winning streak. And a 4-game winning streak. He's now currently 1-2 straight. It's going to happen. You know, and he's doing the things that you got to do. You know, he's making players accountable. Like when Kuznetsov took a hooking penalty, I think it was against Vancouver, he benched them for the rest of the first period with the exception of the power play.
Right.
Because you can't be taking all these dumb penalties.
Yeah.
And the only way you're going to get people to stop taking dumb penalties is by sending the message by benching them, whether people agree with it or not. And Kuznetsov, despite what everyone says on social media, agreed with Reirden about doing that. Because he understood, I took a dumb penalty that I shouldn't have taken. I have to pay the price for it.
Right.
You have to have accountability. And the fact that Todd Reirden's willing to do that says a lot. So,
yeah.
I like that. But again, he's a rookie coach. He's right alongside with Jim Montgomery. David Quinn. Who else is a rookie coach this season? I'm trying to think. I think they might be the only three rookie coaches.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dallas is doing pretty good. I think Dallas is back in the playoff spot again. The Rangers aren't making the playoffs this year. They're probably going to be sellers in a couple weeks at the trade deadline. But they're still competitive.
Right.
You know, that's the thing. The Rangers are still competitive, and they ain't making the playoffs. Carolina. Oh, and Rod Brind'Amour. He's the other rookie coach, Rod Brind'Amour.
That's right. Correct. Yeah.
And here's the thing. Out of those four coaches that I named, Jim Montgomery and David Quinn both came from college, so they're college head coaches. Todd Reirden was the associate coach of the Capitals, and he was an assistant coach on other levels, you know, like with the Penguins and stuff like that and the minors. So this is his first real time being a head coach, but he has been in a coaching role for a while.
Right.
Carolina, Rod Brind'Amour's never coached a day in his life up until this season.
It's crazy to think that, too, when you think especially how long he's been associated with the game of hockey.
Yeah. This is his first real crack at coaching. Carolina may not make the playoffs, but that is one hell of a competitive team.
And, oh, and they're fun to watch, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I'm glad you said that, because Shaggy Dixon and I, we went down to North Carolina for that Whalers-Bruins game when the Hurricanes played at the Hartford Whalers. Like, watching them live was really fun because it was like, you know, it, like, there's a competitiveness to it. And, like, when they play with that competitiveness, it's a lot more fun to watch.
Right.
Especially when you know that this team probably doesn't have the chance of making the playoffs.
Right.
Which, by the way, huge thanks to the staff of PNC Arena. You guys were really nice. Yeah. I probably said the name of the arena wrong. No, it's PNC Arena. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think you're spot on.
Yeah. I'm not stupid. Yay. but like, it was fun to watch. And it was like, and thankfully they beat the Bruins. But, you know.
Right.
Everyone wants to see the Bruins lose. But, yeah. But the thing is that I think Reardon's doing the right things. I think he's playing Holpe and Copley the right way. You know, he's got to mix up the lines to get things going when things aren't going. Things are kind of going now, so you don't want to tamper too much with it. Maybe depending, like, on, as we play Florida tomorrow and LA on Monday, you may want to change a couple things on your bottom six just simply because of who you're playing. But outside of that, I think Reardon's been doing fine. You know, it's like the thing I just said. You know, you look at the four rookie coaches. They aren't doing that bad.
No.
They're doing pretty good with the teams that they have and the situations that they're kind of dealt with. You know, one team is in a rebuild, needs to admit that they're going to go into a rebuild, and the Rangers, the Hurricanes, which are a very super competitive team but probably won't make the playoffs. And then you have Dallas and Washington, who are in playoff spots right now. So you can't argue with it.
No.
So ebbs and flows, people.
Most assuredly. So, Michael, if you don't mind, I got one more question for you.
Shoot.
All right. So
we don't have time limits anymore. So what the heck, you know?
Yeah.
It's time. I decide the time limit.
That's true. So we talked about Burakovsky being on the trading block. We've talked about the depth of the team that they have, and we've talked about hard decisions. So what I'm looking at as the approaching NHL trade deadline, what are the Caps doing when that time comes around? And if they do bring somebody in, who is there a particular player that you like? Or is there somebody that you think would be nice to give them a bit of oomph come playoff time?
Well, I'm going to break everyone's hearts on this one, but I wouldn't touch a single player off the St. Louis Blues. Because you know, and I know, like, we know for a fact that they pretty much made it where every player on that team is eligible to be traded.
Right.
I wouldn't touch a single one of them. And I know everyone here in D.C. wants Vladimir Tarasenko. It ain't going to happen. You can't take the cap hit. Because he's at, like, what, $8 million a season?
Yeah, it's pretty lofty.
How are you going to fit him under the cap? So let's be realistic here, because it ain't going to happen. But here's the interesting thing. You have a couple teams in a couple tough situations. You know Toronto ain't going to move some guys. Although, here's my thing. I still think William Nylander gets traded at the draft. I'm calling it. I don't care what anyone says. Nylander is going to get traded. After the stunt he pulled with the holdout, he's gone. And I think he lands in Carolina because they really want him. But, I mean, the first guy on my list would have been Paul Zujarvi for Burakovsky straight up. But, you know, it's kind of interesting. There's... If you're going to do a trade, it would probably have to be a depth trade for the bottom six for offense, because that's the only thing I could see us needing, particularly in the center spot. But, you know, Brian Boyle just got traded to Nashville yesterday or the other day.
Right, right.
So that kind of takes Brian Boyle out of the picture, and he would have been a good player to go after. I know Wayne Simmonds is on the trade market from Philadelphia. But the thing is that all indicators say that guy's going to Toronto. You know, So, and not only that, but you wouldn't be really able to fit Wayne Simmons under the cap anyways. You know, that's another situation where you got to find a way to make cap space happen. But he's also in the last year of his deal. But, you know, he's also put on a lot of miles on him, so do you really want to try to trade for him? So, I mean, it's kind of there's no big name that comes out that says, I want to have that player on my team, or I need to have that player on my team, because there really aren't that many out there. When you look at how the Caps roster is, it's really just your bottom six really at the center spot that you want to, you know, make sure that you shore up.
Right.
So it would just be a depth guy, and honestly, you can really go after anybody. And actually, one name that got put out there that some people say would be a good fit for the Capitals would be Colin Wilson.
I could see that.
From Colorado, who we just saw last night.
I could see that.
And it's like, yeah, the guy competes. He plays hard every game. You know, he can put up goals when he needs to. He's not going to be a goal scorer, but he can work hard to get some. So it's like, I mean, you can go after a guy like a Colin Wilson, but I wouldn't trade for a defenseman. I think we're set there. I wouldn't trade for a goaltender. We're obviously set there. As you said, it's a tough call. I wouldn't be surprised if the Capitals stand pat. If they don't see an offer that they like for Burakovsky, I see them not doing anything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, there's so many other things going on. I mean, you also got to keep an eye on the market, because also remember, if we were talking about this 5 weeks ago, Philadelphia would have been sellers. Philadelphia is like 5 points out of a playoff spot.
Right. How the tides turn, right?
Do you really think they're going to be sellers now?
No,
the Rangers will probably be sellers. The Blues will most likely be sellers. The Panthers could potentially be doing some selling, especially the fact that it's rumored that off of Hockey Night in Canada this past weekend that Derek Brassard will probably get moved again. Carl Hagelin, who Pittsburgh traded to LA, will probably get moved again at the deadline.
See, I'm a big Hagelin fan. I know people have mixed emotions about him, and I am not a Pittsburgh Penguins fan at all. From, you know, and I know he's with the Kings now, but I never a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, but I always like Carl Hagelin.
Well, Hagelin ain't doing anything with the Kings.
Yeah.
Maybe, there's also talk now that Ilya Kovalchuk may waive his no-trade move to go to one of the teams that's on his list. Although I don't see anyone taking him.
No, you know? I mean, yeah.
The guy's all offense, no defense. And, you know, yeah. Oh, and he's also not adjusting well from coming back from the KHL, which is like a glorified men's league that doesn't hit.
Right.
So it's like me playing up in Skate Frederick, you know, that's the equivalent of what he's doing, but but being paid to do it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got to make their own personal decisions. I think about Kovalchuk, and I just honestly think he made the wrong choice by going back to Russia. I think that if he had signed with, if he didn't retire, let's say he was still with Jersey and he, you know, asked for a trade or accepted a trade.
Who would have accepted a 17-year contract?
Exactly. I mean,
there's only one team that we know of that would accept a 17-year contract. Right. And that's the Arizona Coyotes, because everybody loves burying those contracts in the desert.
Well, I just look at it from the perspective of I think Kovalchuk could have made a legitimate shot for the Hall of Fame and could have hit 500 goals and 1,000 points. I don't know if he's going to reach any of that, because he went to Russia. And I know, you know, in the grand scheme of things.
Keep something in mind. Jágr went to Russia to the Czech Republic for a while. And then he came back, and then he just started tearing. Yet again, Jágr's a much better player than than Kovalchuk is.
And you're right. Yeah. It rejuvenated Jágr, and he came back in some ways stronger than ever for somebody his age.
Well, it didn't last him that much long, but, you know.
Well, I think if you check, though, I think he when he did go to Russia, of course, you know, in that real sad instance, he was playing with Alexei Tarapanov when he passed away, and then, you know, ended up coming to the Rangers after that. I'm pretty sure he had a 56 goal season with them. But to your point with Kovalchuk, I don't know, he's not a Jágr.
Yeah. Oh, not by any stretch. He's not a Jágr. Yeah, he's all offense, no defense. Don't need him. But it'll just be like, that's the thing. You got to see where teams are at going into it. Like, obviously, like, you know, Brian Boyle would have been a guy I would have brought in, hands down.
Right.
But he went to Nashville.
And so, kudos to them. Good for them.
Oh yeah, you know, good job by Brian Boyle standing in front of Katie Bird in a Predators practice today.
Right, yeah, I saw that.
That was funny. But yeah, it was just, we'll see when we get there. Like, what is it? Let me look at a calendar real quick. So let's see here. The deadline's the 25th. Today's the 8th. So we got 2 full weeks before we even get to the trade deadline. So the Capitals have a game tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So the Capitals have 9 games before the trade deadline. So you want to see and that's probably about how many games a lot of the other teams in the league have leading up to the trade deadline.
Right.
So depending on how teams do in this 2-week stretch, outside of the teams that you know that are going to be sellers and the teams that are going to be buyers, there are those that still have the question marks, the asterisks next to them when you say they're a buyer or a seller. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But going back to your original question about what the Capitals do, if I don't see any, if I'm Brian McClellan and I don't see anything I like for Burakovsky, I just stay put. No need to, like, it's always good to do like those minor league trades, because you can potentially bring those guys up for the playoffs as the depth.
Sure.
I don't see anything. There's no, so it's like last season, the trades that McClellan did was for Michael Kempney from Chicago and for Jacob Jerebeck from Montreal. That was it.
Yeah.
And they won the cup. Those were like, just at the time when you looked at it, they're just depth trades. Kempney's now on the top pair with Carlson, or ended up on the top pair with Carlson. And Jerebeck was a solid defenseman.
Yeah, and there's no sense in making a trade to make a trade. I mean, if you get a good thing going for you, and obviously you guys have the defending Stanley Cup champs, there's no need to make an adjustment if one isn't warranted.
Yeah, but at the same time, you also want to make sure that you do, like, the right little tinkers at the same time. You don't have to go make a big splash.
Right.
Because, like, Michael Kempney, you know, everyone's like, oh, okay, depth defenseman, all right. That ended up being a bigger trade than everyone else thought, you know? So,
sure.
So it's just how it works. Sometimes it's the little trades that do it rather than the big ones.
Yep. A little bit of seasoning, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, and not just for the Caps, because obviously, like, I've already put into work to take the day off so I can, we're going to have ongoing coverage of the NHL trade deadline.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we're going to have an article that will be updated consistently. We're going to publish it right away and just constantly update it so that way people can hop onto it and just go, all right, that's the update on this trade. Steve Gardner is going to be doing the trade graphics. We just finalized with the I hope everyone likes the graphics that we have for game day stuff, because Steve has worked very hard on getting the trade deadline graphics done. Or prepped. We had to come up with a design on how it was going to look. And then we actually got the playoff graphics made, or set up, the format.
Very cool.
So, yeah, that's going to be really nice. So, I can't wait to to show off Steve's really good work. So, and the next season, because I talked to Steve about it, next season we're going to get, we'll probably do it for the end of the Isabel Cup, but for next season we're going to get NWHL Game Day graphics made.
Very cool. That would be awesome.
So we're gonna take that next step to get that. So like when Shaggy does his stuff, we can actually have like a nice actual Game Day graphic instead of just posting up the Connecticut Whales logo. So we want to make it look good. Come on, cut us a break. So, all right.
Awesome.
So are you all questioned out?
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Well, with that, I get to ask you a question.
Yes.
Where can the people find you on the social medias?
I'm primarily on Twitter.
Oh, you see what I did there? Ah.
Yeah, you got me. You threw me for a loop for a little bit, but I caught on. You can find me on Twitter primarily. I'm at Nathaniel A. Oliver, Nathaniel, the letter A for my middle initial, Oliver. Wasn't enough room to fit the E in there. So at Nathaniel A. Oliver on Twitter.
Alrighty. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to txhthockey.com. Our social media stuff is up there, Facebook, Twitter. You can go onto the Twitter account and you can find my personal Twitter account on there. You can give me all your hate mail that you want. I don't care. It's something better than nothing. But yeah, txhthockey.com. Nate, will one day you be allowed to write an article for us as a guest spot?
Yeah, I would love to.
All right. We'll talk about when I hit the stop record button.
Yeah.
So with that, Nate, thanks for coming on TXHT.
Always a pleasure, Michael. Thank you for having me.
And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, we will see you on the ice.